Screen Time with John Fardy. This is News Talk.
Hello and welcome to Screen Time. I'm John Fardy and this is News Talk's TV and movie show. This week on the show, I talk to Glenn Close, Mila Kunis, Darrow McCormack and Kaylee Spaney about their roles in the new Knives Out mystery, Wake Up Dead Man. Legendary producer Jerry Bruckheimer talks to me about F1, which comes to Apple TV. Plus, we review the new James L. Brooks rom-com of sorts, Ella McKay. This show is available as a podcast every Friday at 5 p.m. on newstalk.com or the Newstalk app powered by Go Loud or wherever you get your podcasts. And it's on the radio every Saturday at 6 p.m. here on Newstalk. If you want to get in touch with me, email screentime@newstalk.com. Good weekend to you all. I do hope you're doing well and you're not drowning in, you know, the festiveness. It's very busy, isn't it? It certainly has been for me the last couple of days between work and home and all that kind of stuff. It just, you got to remind yourself that this is meant to be a fun time of year and not to lose ourselves working towards having that fun, if you know what I mean, if I'm making any sense, that it doesn't become stressmas, you know. I'm saying this more for myself than I am for you, that it's just important to, you know, sit back and relax about it all. I sound like a life coach. Just breathe. Chill. Give me your bank card details. Anyway, I do hope you're well. Now, this week, I was watching this.
You're the only one on stage with the Monsignor at the time of his killing. You're the only one at that church who hated his guts.
The spirit really moved him today, huh?
So, tell me. What the hell happened?
Everyone thinks I did it. I didn't do it.
This goes way beyond normal police work. This is something even I have not experienced. A perfectly impossible crime.
This case is solvable, right?
Well, I'm incapable of not solving a crime. Well, you'll see. It's fun.
Wicks had a vast family fortune.
If made public, can ruin people.
God forbid.
Yes, now that was a clip from the latest Knives Out mystery called Wake Up Dead Man, which lands on Netflix this Friday, the 12th of December. As you probably know, Knives Out, this is the third movie in its series. And they have been delightful films. They're just brilliant whodunits, which have Daniel Craig playing Benoit Blanc, a southern gentleman from the mind and the directorship of Rian Johnson. And in the third one, Benoit Blanc returns to possibly his most dangerous case yet, in I think what's the darkest chapter of Rian Johnson's murder mystery opus so far. I think it might even be the best one. What we have is a young priest called Judd Duplantsy, unusual name for a character, played brilliantly by Joss O'Connor. He's sent to assist this charismatic firebrand Monsignor, Jefferson Wicks, played by Josh Brolin, who is, he's just this fire and brimstone kind of guy, and all is not what it seems in this little parish in upstate New York. This preacher Wicks has a modest, a small, but an incredibly devoted flock. And this is the ensemble. As you know, in all these Knives Out movies, or as you may know, there are these ensembles of different characters, and they tend to have brilliant actors in them, and this is no exception. So in this parish, we have Glenn Close playing Martha Delacroix, who's just this very devout church lady. We have Kerry Washington playing a very tightly wound lawyer. Darrow McCormack plays Cy Draven, this kind of aspiring politician who's on his phone all the time. Jeremy Rayner's in there as a doctor. Then there's a cellist, another young lady in the parish played by Kaylee Spaney. Andrew Scott's in there as this author who's getting a bit strange, but they're all devoted to Josh Brolin's character. And Josh O'Connor comes in and doesn't quite get on with them, let's say. But then, as in all these instances, there is a murder and it rocks the town. And in comes Geraldine Scott, played by Mila Kunis, who's going to join forces with Daniel Craig's Benoit Blanc to unravel a mystery that defies all logic. This is a great watch. It's a real good whodunit. As I mentioned, Glenn Close plays Martha, who's just loyal and is devoted to Josh Brolin's character. Mila Kunis plays the cop, the head of the police, who comes in with Benoit Blanc to figure out who committed this murder that takes place early on in the film. So I got to talk to Glenn Close and Mila Kunis about their role in Wake Up Dead Man. I don't think Glenn Close or Mila Kunis need any introduction. Hi, Glenn. Hi, Mila. Nice to see you.
Nice to see you.
Glenn, I've seen lots of your movies. It occurs to me Martha is maybe the most fanatical person you've ever played. She's committed to the cause and going down with the ship like no one we've seen before. Discuss.
Ah, I think my first character, Jenny Fields, was kind of, you know, she had a mission. She had those women who had cut off tongues, and she had made a house
fanatical
for them and everything. Yeah.
Yeah.
And she, yeah. But I think kind of the way people think of it now as kind of a buying into a kind of a cult-like thing. Yeah. I think, yeah, no, she's different from anyone I've ever played before.
Yes, indeed she is. Mila, your character in a way is the right-thinking outsider, it seems to me. You enter this world of very strange people who are all very damaged, and she's kind of like the smartest person in the room. Again, discuss.
It's very true to life, by the way.
Oh my God, I love you. Glad.
It's true.
I don't know if my character's the smartest person in the room. She kind of, she lets people hold the murder weapon. She lets people in to places they shouldn't be going into. She's doing the best she can with what she's got, but I wouldn't say she's the smartest person in the room. Yes, she's practical and she tries hard. She makes mistakes.
That's good enough for me. And Mila or Glenn, either of you can answer this. You know, these movies are generally, and they're great, Knives Out movies, escapist movies, and they're old-fashioned kind of plot-twisty things, whodunit. And yet there were times yesterday morning when I was watching it thinking, especially when Josh Brolin is standing up there, does he remind me of anyone, or is Ryan making observations on the wider world? But again, you guys tell me what you think.
Well, I know that, and I think Ryan, I've heard him say this, he grew up in an evangelical family and community. Mm. So this is closest to him, I think, than any other script that he's written. And I think for that reason, there are elements that come into it, you know, that what one has not seen yet in mm-hmm. these films. And I think that's what makes his films, I think, such a wonderful combination of truth and fantasy.
Yeah, I would agree. I don't know if Ryan based Brolin's character on anyone specific.
No. But that whole kind of
world.
Yeah.
I'm sure he was inspired
belief,
by the people he met.
Of absolute belief.
Mm.
Yeah.
Glenn, the first movie I saw of yours was Jagged Edge, and I was probably too young to have watched it at the time. I remember thinking it was a brilliant movie. And I was thinking about it this morning when I was going to talk to you. There are possibly parallels between this and Jagged Edge in a way.
Oh.
Maybe not.
I don't want to give it away.
Whereupon we cannot speak, we must keep silent.
Yeah.
Okay. We leave it at that. Mila, the first movie I ever remember seeing you in was Forgetting Sarah Marshall those years ago. I was a lot older by then. I'm older than you, so I'm not trying to age you or anything like that. But that movie has had such a life because I think people, the way Jason Segel's character was so distraught, even though it's a comedy, just he mm-hmm. couldn't get over this person who had left him. Do you find that movie has continued to have a life over and above what it is, because it's just that idea, maybe it's a youthful thing, I'm never going to get over this heartache?
Yeah, I think it was written by someone who experienced what that character was going through. So it was something that Jason was feeling at the time. And so I think it felt really personal to him. And I think people could feel that on screen. And yeah, so it's been 20 years since that movie came out.
Yeah.
And I think people have still talked to me about how much they love that movie. It's funny, it's thoughtful, it's sweet. It's a feel-good movie. It's like a perfect movie. It's great.
Yeah. Well, Knives Out, Wake Up Dead Man isn't far behind either in terms of perfect movies. So continued success to both of you.
Thank you.
Thanks. Glenn Close and Mila Kunis there talking to me about, well, Forgetting Sarah Marshall, but before that, Wake Up Dead Man. And you heard an awkward moment there with Glenn Close when my comparison of Wake Up Dead Man to Jagged Edge seemed to unnerve some of the people around that I might be giving a spoiler, which I don't think I was. But anyway, so that was Glenn Close and Mila Kunis, who are in Wake Up Dead Man, the new Knives Out mystery. Now, also in Wake Up Dead Man is Kelly Spaney, who plays Simone, a once world-class cellist who's had a kind of chronic pain condition, and she's had to put down her cello. But she is one of the parishioners in this strange church in Upper New York State. We also have our own Daryl McCormack playing Cy Draven, who's this kind of wannabe politician who doesn't have much of a following, but is attempting to and goes around filming everything on his phone and recording things on his iPad. Daryl McCormack, we spoke to 3 years ago, I think it is, at this stage for Good Luck to You, Rio Grande, where he played a sex worker opposite Emma Thompson. He was also in Bad Sisters, one of our great up-and-coming actors. Well, he's probably arrived now, it's fair to say. And Kaylee Spaney, of course, was in Mayor of Easttown. She was also playing Priscilla in the movie Priscilla, that kind of alternative view of the Elvis story, I suppose, from 2 years ago. And she was brilliant in that. So I spoke to Daryl McCormack and Kaylee Spaney about Wake Up Dead Man. How are you?
Hey, how's it going, John?
Great.
Good to see you.
You too, Daryl. I spoke to you for Good Luck to You, Leo Grand with Emma Thompson about 3 years ago. And I spoke to Emma Thompson about 2 weeks ago and she was missing you. And she said, you never have an Irish man around when you need one. And I pointed out that I was Irish, but she was less enthused by me than she was you.
So. Oh, well, if you see her, you won't be seeing her again anytime soon, but I should just text her.
you could do that. I did make her cry, actually, by accident.
You did?
Yeah, I brought up Remains of the Day and she got quite emotional about it.
Wow.
Anyway, we better talk about Knives Out, Wake Up Dead Man, which is terrific. Kaylee, if I could start with you, it seems to me that I really enjoyed it and it's great because I said yes to interviewing you before I went to see it and I thought, what if it's terrible when I watched it tomorrow morning? And of course it wasn't. But in a way, they're so delightfully old-fashioned, it seems to me. There's something... It's like watching on a Sunday afternoon, but I don't want to put words in your mouth, but do you get that sense of them?
Yeah, I think there's something, Ryan is such a cinephile and lover of cinema. And I think you see that in the work that he does. He's such a genius in the way that he crafts these films and what he wants to do with them and explore his own sort of personal feelings about his life and the world. And I think he's one of one, but I definitely know what you mean in terms of old school. I think he takes his time and he takes his prep very seriously. And, you know, when he speaks of sort of the inspirations from Edgar Allan Poe or the locked door mysteries,
yes.
The love and joy that we felt on set also, I think, comes right through that screen when you're watching these films.
Yeah. Daryl, your character, Cy, is it fair to say... You know, for want of a better phrase, he's a jackass.
There isn't really
anything redeeming.
No, I described him as that. Well, we were doing some press in Toronto, and I described him as jackass, and people were almost shocked. But I was like, guys, have you seen the film? Like, yeah, I would definitely describe him as a jackass. I think ultimately, as an actor, you're always trying to not actually judge the character. So I always was trying to find a way and like. This guy is so desperate to find a route in his life. And he's like in his early 30s, he's kind of trying to find that avenue. And I think he's lost. And I think in that sense, for a lot of maybe men who don't have the absence of father figure, and I think they can just run into all sorts to find a guidance. And so that was how I tried to be in him and try and understand like why is he so selfish? It's all coming from this deeper place, but on the surface definitely he's very much a jackass and
who never puts his phone down either.
He's so phone addicted. Which I think again is like what I love, because his morality, like he's willing to record anything if it serves what he's trying to find. So that is a great kind of piece of writing and that he's very opportunistic.
Yeah.
But yeah, Jackass all the way.
Great, super. That'll be on the poster. Kaylee, I wonder, you know, these movies, they're becoming like, you know, the Mount Rushmore of great actors. It's like people probably want to be in them. Were you kind of, because all these people, you know, Josh Brolin, Glenn Close, Edward Norton in the last one, Daniel Craig, that they're these ensemble pieces of great acting talent. I wonder when the call came through, did you kind of secretly go, yes, they want me? Not that they shouldn't have.
Secretly? No. I was like, are you sure? Like, what is happening? I mean, it's bonkers. Like, to get this opportunity to roll up on set, not just with Ryan, but these just, like, creme de la creme, like, top actors. Like, I knew I was going to learn something. And you just walk on set and soak it all in. Mm. And it really was, like... It could have been I was obviously intimidated walking on set, but it could have been much worse if people just sort of scattered back to their trailers and Daniel and Ryan didn't set the tone. But it's such a cozy little summer camp environment that not only did I learn so much, but I also, this is the way to make films, in my opinion. Like, so I just think this is, so true. There's no other way I want to do it. It's because these people are total pros.
Mm.
Yeah.
Well, you were pretty professional yourselves, both of you. And Kaylee, read the cello. I had a quick look online, but I wasn't sure. Like, I can't play the cello, but it looked like you had it down. Do you play the cello or?
No, it wasn't something I knew how to do. But that's not the sound of it. It's obviously not me. But no, I got to learn. I know how to play that song now, which is, you know, the life of an actor.
Incredible.
Jack of all trades, master of none. But it was such a fun experience having a cello. I had cello lessons every day. Oh. It was such a beautiful instrument. Mm. It was a real treat.
Yeah. Daryl, I mentioned good luck to you, Leo Grand. What, you know, that was billed at the time. You played you played this sex worker. Was that a kind of changing moment in your career? Because I was reading this morning, like, it wasn't that long prior to that you were waiting tables when you first came to London and stuff, as a lot of actors do. Do you look back on it now, 3 years since, going, that was kind of a before and after?
Yeah, definitely. It was like a baptism of fire for me. I hadn't really done a lead in a film even, so to be kind of thrusted into this two-hander with Emma was like a bit overwhelming, but I definitely felt that it has been a piece of work that I've gotten to be a part of that has been recognized in the industry in some sense. And, you know, when I had a meeting with Ryan, that was the film that he brought up, you know, so there's definitely been opportunities that have come from that film and directors that have shown interest because they've seen that work. So it's definitely been, yeah, I would say it's been a marking point where, like, okay, that was definitely one of the initial, you know, breakthroughs, or this idea that you get to be part of work that just exposes you to a wider body of people.
Sure.
Yeah, and I think it was, what I love about it is the fact that it was so personal too. I've always, also, like, Emma's another example of someone who is a complete pro at what she does, but also leads in such a way that sets a tone that you kind of aspire to, you know, be someday as an actor. And just how she treated people on set, and again, that tone that she set, it was like, those are the bigger takeaways I find when you're starting off in your career.
Yeah, sure. Kaylee, I remember vividly about 18 months ago watching you in Priscilla, and you were absolutely terrific in it. I wonder, was there any kind of, like, backlash is maybe too strong a word, but, you know, the view of Elvis in that movie is maybe, certainly compared to, like, say, Baz Luhrmann's movie, it questions the relationship between him and Priscilla, and, gosh, she was very young, and did he care enough about her? And I wonder, was there any heat from, because Elvis fans are like Beatles fans, he's adored, and he's a Christ-like figure. Was there any heat on your portrayal, or maybe you didn't feel any of that because people just talked about your wonderful performance?
Oh, thank you. That's sweet. Yeah, I mean, I think there's a sense of pressure when you're telling a story about real people and real lives, and that you know, family is obviously still around and Priscilla is still alive. So there is definitely a sensitivity to it. But I think the thing that I was interested in, obviously, working with Sophia, but telling something that was nuanced and wasn't black or white. And I think those are the stories I gravitate to. And actually, in this film, what I find so fascinating is that not only is it an entertaining murder mystery, but Ryan is also injecting, like I said, like a conversation with himself, like his own personal conflicts. And actually, in this film, I also don't think it's black or white. Like, I think there's a gray area in terms of logic and faith and art. Like, it's a film about grace. So even though those films are completely different, I think that's what I crave in storytelling is just nuance and something that feels very human. Because I think with the internet and the way the world is today, it feels like there's less and less room, which I think then makes it feel way more important, the stories that you choose to tell, to have that.
Well, listen, you both play humans very well, you'd be pleased to hear, in everything I've seen you in, and continued success. And Daryl, you better text them, okay? Because
yeah, I can't
be in the middle of this.
No, stop making a cry as well, mate.
I'll do my best. Thanks a million, guys. Take care.
Take care, John. See you.
Cheers. Kaylee Spaney and Daryl McCormack there, talking to me about their careers, playing Priscilla, and good luck to you, Leo Grant, but also about their roles in Wake Up Dead Man, the new Knives Out mystery, which is a great watch, which you will really enjoy. It's perfect festive viewing on a Sunday afternoon or a Friday morning, whenever you want to watch it, but it's a great whodunit. They're like Agatha Christie, Columbo kind of things with a modern sensibility. So it's well worth a watch, and it's on Netflix from now, the 12th of December. After the break, something different, but hopefully equally entertaining, in the form of the legendary producer, Jerry Bruckheimer, talking to me about the Apple release of F1. Now you're welcome back to Screen Time, News Talk's TV and movie show. Now, F1 the movie was released during the summer, and it was a big blockbuster all about F1. And this Friday, the 12th of December, it releases on Apple TV, dubbed The Greatest That Never Was. Sonny Hayes, played by Brad Pitt, was Formula One's most promising phenomena of the 1990s, until an accident on the track nearly ended his career. 30 years later, he's a nomadic racer for hire when he's approached by former teammate Ruben Cervantes, played by Javier Bardem, owner of a struggling Formula One team that's on the verge of collapse. Ruben convinces Sonny to come back to Formula One for, you guessed it, one last shot at saving the team and being the best in the world. He'll drive alongside Joshua Pierce, played by Damson Idris, the team's hottest rookie, intent on setting his own pace. But as the engines roar, Sonny's pace catches up with him, and he finds that in Formula One, your teammate is your fiercest competition. Kerry Condon also stars in this as one of the people in the pit, so to speak, or the Formula One racing team. This was released in the summer. This is an honest to goodness great action film. Take a little flavor of it.
You got an entire assembly line of kids raised on the simulator.
No, I don't have time for some kid to learn how to come in 10th. I don't.
Well, you don't just walk off the street and pilot a rocket.
Yes, you can if you've done it before. That's the whole point. Louis Chiron was 57 years old when he won the Monaco Grand Prix.
Who is who?
Philippe Tancelin, 56
hey,
years
you
old.
You just Googled these names, didn't you?
Some people look at Sonny Hayes, they see a guy who lives in a van, a gambling junkie who missed his shot.
Wow, Ruben, you are really selling this.
But I see a guy who makes teams better. I see experience, I see know-how.
You're off your meds.
My rook is a phenomenal talent. Phenomenal! But he's young. You know what he lacks? Maturity. You plus him, boom, I got a team.
Yes, Javier Bardem and Brad Pitt there in F1, the movie, which is now available on Apple TV. As I say, a great kind of popcorn action movie that was rightly given the critical thumbs up for the most part. Chris Wasser gave it 3 stars. I'd probably go a little further than that. Great action movie. And there's a bit of heart in there as well, and a kind of, you know, one last shot at the title. Now, it was produced by Jerry Bruckheimer, who may be the world's best known, greatest, certainly most prolific producer. He has given us everything from Pirates of the Caribbean, Bad Boys, Beverly Hills Cop, Top Gun, Armageddon, Black Hawk Down. I could go on. He has his hand on so many things. He's 82 years young, and I got to talk to him about F1 and a bit more besides. How are you?
Good, John. How are you?
I've been watching your films for a very long time, so it's a real pleasure to talk to you.
Yeah, too much free time on your hands. It's not good.
I probably did, certainly a while ago. Listen, I watched the film again last night, you'd be pleased to hear, and I just thought, you know, this is wildly entertaining. This is fast cars, second chances, bit of romance, plenty of humor. It seems to me this is the type of movie you loved as a kid and the type of movie you love to make. Discuss.
You're absolutely right. You know, I love films that have emotional resonance and an emotional through line. And that's what this movie has. We're great with the driving and the authenticity of the movie. And the fact that we, you know, had all the drivers lean in, the teams lean in. We built the car. We shot it for real. Brad and Damson actually drove those cars 180 miles an hour. There's no blue screen or wind machines. Mm. It's all for real. But what makes the movie work for audiences is they feel something. We move them. We transport them into another world. We give them an inside look into a world they'll never be a part of. And that, especially for European audience who've been following F1 their entire lives, and they can see how the inner workings actually work with these teams and the drama that goes on and the competition between the two drivers. It's the only sport in the world where your teammate is your biggest competitor.
Yeah.
Everybody wants to be the number one driver on their team.
Yeah. You know, I was thinking, it's, you know, I know huge interest in airplanes, but I love Top Gun. Same thing with Rocky. I'm not a boxing fan, but I love those movies. I know that's not one of yours, but it seems that F1, like, I'm probably indifferent about F1. I haven't watched that much of it. I'm a football fan for my sins, or soccer, as you might call it. But this is thrilling. And I presume that's the sweet spot when you make a movie like this, that even if you've no interest or no knowledge of cars, that you're still going to find this brilliantly entertaining.
Yeah, the driving is the backdrop of a phenomenal character story that has a theme to it about redemption and second chances and all the kind of things we all want in our lives. And look, we like to move audiences, move them emotionally. That is the key. And this is the kind of movie that you love on the big screen, you love it on the small screen, because it has the characterization and the themes that we all like.
Yeah, you'd be pleased to hear my just recently turned 13-year-old watched it and loved it. So it's, and I'm a lot older than him, so it's hitting all the bases, you'd be pleased to hear.
Yeah, and also the music is so great.
Yeah, it is.
Figured out a way to sonically to get his sound and his music through the roar of those engines. And then we have all these phenomenal songs in it that Atlanta Records and Kevin Weaver put together for us. It's just was great. And I mean, from Ed Shearing, who's great, to Rosie, and it goes on, Chris Stapleton. It's just a really great, great collaboration with all these artists.
Well, I think, doesn't it start with Led Zeppelin?
It does.
And I was thinking, this wasn't a cheap soundtrack.
No, it wasn't. We spent a lot of money on it.
Yeah, well,
how you get Led Zeppelin. First of all, you have to show it to the band members, and they show it separately to each one. Okay.
Wow.
So you show it separately to each one. And if they like it and they agree to it, you pay a fee. And if you don't use it, they keep the fee. So that's a good business you're in.
That may be the best one I've ever heard of. Yes. Tell me this. I actually spoke to Kerry Condon a couple of weeks ago for a different movie, not to Irish it up, but a lot was made at the time when it got a cinema release that they didn't start trying to turn her into an American. She spoke in her God-given accent, which we were all thrilled about because she's from a place called Tipperary. Was that your doing, or whose idea was it to let her keep her accent?
What it is it's F1 is an international sport.
Mm.
There are people from every country in the world who work on these teams. We wanted to be, again, an authentic racing movie. Brad and Damson trained for 4 months to get in those cars and drive them. They're beasts. They're going 180 miles an hour. The cast, wherever they were from, that's the language they use. And we cast them to make it an international movie because it's an international sport. So deliberate.
Yeah, excellent, excellent. Well, more of that, and so say all of us. I'm just wondering, you're probably tired of being asked about the future of cinema and all that stuff, because you do get asked about it a lot. So I don't want to get into that and how do you see it. But one interesting thing came about this morning when I was just reminding myself of all you did, that in a couple of places they talked about Top Gun Maverick saving cinema post-pandemic. And I do remember at the time, it's 3 years ago now, but friends of mine booking seats and being so excited about, and one of them got F14 as their seat number and stuff like that. Like, it was a real clarion call back to the cinema. But I mean, looking back now, 3 years hence, how do you see it? Do you think you had a part to play in getting people back into theaters, as you call them?
That's what you guys say. And that's
yeah.
I'll take it. I don't know. But yeah. What was great about it is, thanks to Tom, because that COVID, we didn't know when it was going to end.
Yeah.
And so at a certain point, the studio said, we have a huge investment. We're paying a lot of interest on this money. So they were going to sell it to a streamer.
Okay.
And Tom stepped in there and says, nope, this is going in theaters. This thing is going to end. And this is a movie you want to see on a big screen. And he was absolutely right.
Yeah, he certainly was. Tell me this, just in terms of all the movies you've done, I remember watching Beverly Hills Cop when I was 10 or 11 and probably being too young to watch it at the time, but we loved it. And I could quote the script of the first one to you. Like, looking back, all those swear words, I wonder at the time, because it was wildly successful, was there any heat for all the bad language in that at the time? I know that's a strange question, but to us in Dublin, working class Dublin in the 1980s, watching that, we were like, how did they get away with all these F words? Did you get any stick at the time for that?
Yeah, I did get a lot of stick from my mom.
That was about it. But not from, I don't know, film companies or anything like that.
That was it. It was just our mothers were upset, but
okay.
Audiences loved it.
Yeah, they certainly did. Tell me this, just back to F1, Brad Pitt, he's not a method actor necessarily, but he seemed to go really deep on this and train for a long time to figure out how to sit inside the car and all that. I mean, was he the guy you always wanted for this, as, you know, the perfect blend of someone who's been around a while but still has magnetism, and not to be pejorative about it, but lots of young women and men might find very attractive?
Yeah, no, I think that he leaned in a big way. Mm-hmm. Look, spent 4 months training in those cars along with Damson. He could have done another movie. He mm-hmm. could have made a lot of money. He decided he wanted to do this right. He wanted to do it at actual speed, as fast as the insurance company would let him go. And that's what makes a great actor. And he worked really hard on the screenplay with myself and Joe and Aaron Kruger, and even Lewis Hamilton came in and did a lot of work with us. We spent 8 hours in one day in a hotel room where I'm sitting right now with Joe, Lewis, Brad, Aaron Kruger, and Jeremy, who was one of the other producers on the movie, just going through line by line of that script to make sure we had it accurate. And the scene on the balcony, that a lot of that came from Lewis himself.
Wow.
Feels like when he's in that car and it's all working, he becomes like one part of the machine. And he says, you're flying and you're flying.
You have had terrific success with this movie and all the way back to things like Flashdance and the aforementioned Beverly Hills Cop. You're more aware of your age than I am, but you are 81 years of age. You seem in terrific shape for it. But I mean, you could be playing golf or whatever the cliches are for retirement or whatever. Are you just, pardon the unfortunate pun, driven to do this?
I love it. I love entertaining audiences. I love standing back in the theater when we preview one of our movies, or go to the theater when it's playing and watching people enjoy it. I want to give joy to the world. I want people to get out of their lives and forget about the battles they have with their bosses and whatever's going on with their kids. And just let me take you away for a couple hours and give you a good ride. And you might learn something too, which is even better.
Yeah. Tell me this. I was heartened to hear that when this could be wrong in the age of the internet, but one of your favorite movies is Good Will Hunting. And that's in my top five as well. And it gets slagged a bit, as we say in this part of the world, for being too much of a guy cry. But man, I love that film. Why do you love Good Will Hunting?
Again, it's emotional.
Mm.
And that's what why we go to the movies. That's you see good actors, great writing, good directing, and they move you. Top Gun and F1 wouldn't have worked if it didn't have the emotional resonance. It didn't have the emotional through line. You feel something. You feel about these characters. You care about them. You know, there's a sequence where there's a crash and the whole audience goes, oh, my God, and they scream. Yeah. That's what we want to take them. We want to get them up and get them down and have them walk out happy.
Yeah. The crash scene is immense. Listen, finally, you've been very generous with your time. Everyone asks you about, tell us about the new Top Gun or the new Days of Thunder. I'm not going to, but I am going to ask you about Beverly Hills Cop one more time. Axel F, I actually interviewed Eddie for it. Everyone seemed to enjoy it immensely. I thought it was a real return to form. Is there another outing in that franchise, do you think?
Let's hope so. You never know. I never thought we'd make another Top Gun, but
yeah,
guess what? We did it.
Yeah, so indeed you did.
Yeah.
Well, listen, thank you so much for taking the time. It was
pleasure
a real
to talk to you.
Pleasure to talk to you. And maybe in 10 years' time, we'll do it again.
No, we got to do it before then. Hopefully, I'll make another movie. I'll come back here in a year or two.
Brilliant. Looking forward to it. Thanks so a million. Much. Cheers. Bye bye. The great Jerry Bruckheimer there talking about F1, the movie, and a bit more besides. And F1, the movie, releases on Apple TV on the 12th of December. Up next, we review the big cinema release of the week. James L. Brooks is back with what some are calling his last movie, Ella McKay. Now you're welcome back to Screen Time News Talk's TV and movie show. We turn to the week's big new cinema release. We were talking about Knives Out, Wake Up, Dead Man earlier, and also F1, which are on streamers. But in the cinema this week is Ellie McKay, starring Emma Mackey. Delighted to be joined by movie critic and of this parish, Kenneth Doran, who joins me now. Kenneth, how are you?
Not too bad, yeah, thanks.
I always call you Kenneth Foran for some reason, yeah. Don't I? Why do I do that?
Maybe it's branding. Maybe I should just change my name.
No, stick with Doran. Yeah. Listen, Kenneth, you have been to see Ellie McKay. It's Ellie McKay?
Ella McKay.
Ella McKay. Yes, sorry. Ella McKay. I keep going to say McKay as well. It's because of football and stuff like that. So I mentioned it was James L. Brooks. So what's going on in this? She's a politician of sorts, Emma Mackey.
Yeah, it's interesting. It's kind of a confusing film because there's a lot of different elements to it. Without getting too technical, you know, they kind of say the golden rule is within the first 10 minutes of the film, you should have a rough idea of who your characters are and where the story's kind of going. But this film kind of felt like there was a few different starts where in the beginning, it seems like it's a film about this person, Ella McKay, who has this kind of troubled relationship with her father, who's played by Woody Harrelson. Mm-hmm. And it feels like the film is going to be about their relationship and their reconciling, but that it doesn't really linger on that too much. Then, as you said, it seems like it's going to be about her journey as this politician. She's like 34, the youngest governor in her particular state, and you think she's going to have to kind of go up against the machinations of the political machine, but we don't really dwell on that either. There's a kind of a plot with her brother who, you know, she's kind of grown distant from, and is she going to make amends with him, but we don't spend too much time on that either. And then she has a husband who seems to be more interested in her for the political power her position brings. And, you know, it kind of reminded me of something like Love Actually, where you have lots of little stories, but whereas in something like that, because you have these snippets from different characters in different settings, when you put them all together, and the kind of central theme comes true, it makes sense. In this, I found it was a little bit muddled.
Okay, so Emma Mackey plays Ella McKay, and are all those storylines told from her point of view?
Yes. Well, actually, it's interesting. So you mentioned, so it's James L. Brooks who has written and directed this. Mm. So he has a Simpsons connection. He was working on The Simpsons. It's produced by Gracie Films.
But he also did the Mary Tyler Moore Show. I mean, he's gone back years. He's the lot, godfather of all sorts of things.
So he's done all that. And then there's a character in this played by Julia Kavner, who does the voice of Marge.
Yeah.
And one other thing. So there's this connection. But so Julia Kavner, sorry, that's what I was going to say. Julia Kavner, she plays a woman called Estelle, who is like her secretary, but she's also the film's narrator.
Okay.
Which is an interesting thing because I feel like either when you have a narrator, it's either going to be someone who is a kind of a disembodied voice removed from the story, or it's a character in the story, but there's some kind of...
She's both in this.
Yeah, she's kind of both. It's never really explained, like, you know, she's not dictating a letter at the end, or she's writing a book or giving an interview. You know, it's just she is this omniscient kind of narrator, but she's also a character in the story.
Okay.
So in terms of, I suppose, format, if you want to call it, it's a that's another kind of confusing thing where we're hearing it from Ellie's point of view, but it's also being told by this narrator who's also a character in the story, but not present for the thing she's talking about. That's what I mean. It's a bit of a weird one.
And is the, could this sound slightly confusing? Yeah. So is the point of the film, it's meant to be a portrait of Ellie in all the versions of her life?
Yeah. So,
but there's one timeline, right? This isn't some multiverse thing or anything. No.
It's pretty straightforward. It's, yeah, as you say, it's kind of a, what would you call it, like a character study of her. But it's interesting because I didn't know too much about it. So based on purely how I felt watching it, the character's called Ella McKay, played by a woman called Emma McKee. And she's this wonderful woman who's funny and talented. And I thought this was going to be like a self-produced project or something. So when I seen James L. Brooks pop up, I was a little bit shocked that this wasn't like some kind of vehicle, because it, as you say, more than a character study, it's like a worship of this Ella McKay character, because she's a politician, but she's, you know, bright and funny, and she's the only uncorruptible one. I think it's actually quite naive in that way, where it's portrayal of how this person working in the political landscape, going back to that Simpsons connection, I was thinking, this is like if Lisa Simpson wrote like a film.
Oh,
like,
dear.
It's just, it's very naive and very simplistic. And in terms of its characterization, you know, so like there's this character, the husband, who, as I say, is kind of interested in maybe the power and the fame that she brings than her actually. And it's very straightforward. And I think in this kind of landscape, we talked about before how these kind of lighthearted, romantic comedy type films seem to be getting more mature. There seems to be a greater depth in things. And even something like came out a couple of weeks ago, Eternity.
Yes.
You know, stuff like that, where the landscape has changed and this film just feels 20 years
today. Yeah, yeah. And sorry, I call her Emma Mackey as opposed to...
Emma Mackey, that's probably, yeah.
That's probably right. But former guest on this show. Yeah, no, it is. Ella McKay, Emma Mackey, absolutely. Is she good in it? Because she's a good actress.
She, yeah, this is the thing. It's hard to distinguish when it's all kind of put together.
Yeah.
But I would say there's no one who does a bad performance. But I think the script is the biggest enemy of this thing, and they're working hard against it as opposed to with it. Because even Jamie Lee Curtis is in this.
As her mother, right?
Her aunt. A kind of surrogate mother figure. And, you know, Jamie Lee Curtis is great, and you put her in the right role, she's really good. In this, it just felt very flat. It felt very kind of forced. And that's why I didn't even mention the dialogue. The dialogue is the worst offender. This was like... I kind of went through a few different phases of confusion and shock, and then
the five stages of confusion.
I kind of thought, is this like an avant-garde thing? Is this like Wes Anderson? And I just didn't get it. But it's just, do you know what? I think it kind of speaks to a bigger problem that's kind of growing in the industry, and you'll probably be aware of this. So this is going to be out in cinemas now, but inevitably it's going to end up on streaming. I wonder how much of this was made with second screen viewing in mind, because...
Oh, dear.
Yeah, so obviously people who aren't familiar, when you watch Netflix or Disney Plus, you're going to have your phone or tablet or screen, you're going to be, you know, splitting your attention. So what you have is characters overly explaining how they feel or things that are happening, things that are, you know, happening on screen as they happen. So I felt a lot of that. Like, you had characters like, I'm really sad now, you're making me angry. And so, you know, stuff like that where you're like, emote that, show that through your performance. You don't say that.
Yeah, that's really depressing. The idea they might be making a movie specifically thinking people are going to have another screen on the go. Like, we don't have to get into this now. We'll have you back to talk about it. But I never do that, no matter what I'm watching. Only Fools and Horses. Put your phone or your tablet down. Anyway, let's not get into Old Man Shouts a Cloud. Tell me this, just on Richie giving a star rating, you mentioned no one is served well by this. I do love Woody Harrelson. Yeah. He plays a dissolute father to Emma. Is he also not capable of making anything out of this?
I don't think there's, you know, it's... As I said, I definitely don't want this to be, you know, a criticism of his performance. There's not a lot he could do with it. He's underused. Like, that's what I mean. Like, there's so many different strands of the story that each one, if you kind of dug down into it, could have been the heart of this film. But it's like, you know, when you were younger and you thought, if I mix the red paint, the blue paint, the green paint, it'll make some kind of wonderful rainbow color. But then you mix them all together and it just turns brown. It's that. It's
wow. Put that on the poster, folks. Tell me this then. I'm almost afraid to ask. That sounds like a mess, but what are you going to give Stars Wise for Ellen McKay?
I give it one star.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. That sounds fair. Like, normally one is very harsh, but this sounds like a mess. And if you're making movies to, you know, eventually you can watch this while you're watching your phone, please don't. So, Ken Doran has given Ellen McKay one star. It's a mess. Ken, it was a great review, though. Thanks.
Thank you.
We better take a clip. God help us.
Hi, I'm the narrator. I'm here to provide facts about Ellen McKay. I've worked for her ever since she finished law school, so I'm not exactly neutral. I'm nuts about her. This is how it started.
Aunt Helen, I have a ridiculously serious problem, and you're the only one I can tell.
I'm about to add to your problems, Ella. Your father's here.
Why?
We haven't seen each other in how long? You don't know either?
Eddie, you promised not to be yourself.
I'm a different person now. I met an incredible woman.
Oh!
No, no, no! The way I've never in my life felt this way about any other woman.
Jesus! Eddie!
I wasn't counting your mother. She's in a completely different category.
A clip there from Ellen McKay. That sounded kind of funny, but it definitely isn't, according to Kenneth there, and sounds like a mess, I'm sorry to say. That is it for this week. Hopefully you've enjoyed the show, despite, you know, that film not being very good. Next week, we're going to have a doozy of a show. Can you say doozy? I just did. Because I'm going to be talking to Toni Collette, Timothy Spall and Andrea Riseborough about their new film Goodbye June on Netflix. I'm also going to be talking to Steve Coogan and Ada Hartwick about Saipan. And as if all that wasn't enough, I'm going to be talking to the actors who play Patrick and SpongeBob respectively for the new SpongeBob movie. So do tune in next week. In the meantime, if you want to get in touch with me at any stage, you can email us, screentime@newstalk.com. This show is available as a podcast every Friday at 5 p.m. on the News Talk app, powered by Go Loud, or wherever you get your podcasts. And it's on the radio every Saturday at 6 p.m. here on News Talk. Leave you with a little music from the movies. And because we were talking about Wake Up Dead Man, the new Knives Out mystery on Netflix, it gives me opportunity to play out with one of my favorite songs of all time. This is from Wake Up Dead Man, is the great and the garrulous Tom Waits with Come On Up to the House. So I'll leave you with the dark, twisted, but beautiful sounds of Tom Waits. Wish you a happy remainder to your weekend, and talk to you one last time before Christmas with a jam-packed show next week. Thanks for listening and take care.
Is cracked. Come on to the house. The only things that you can see is all that you lack.